Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We're back out. We did two stops in October, my birthday, so we got to make it happen. We're going to have a dozen before Christmas. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have Raven scratch-offs to give away. We have had a lucky batch, had some real winners up at Hollywood Casino a couple of weeks ago where we're going back on December 1st. Going to start the party this week, though, on Friday at Fadley's. I was wearing my Fadley shirt a little earlier on. We're going to be at Costas next Thursday. We're going to be at Coco's later in the month. We're going to be at Gertrude's at the BMA. I've really been looking forward to eating John's Crab Cake over there as well and taking recommendations on other places as well as we get out on the road. I'm going to be down in Annapolis with Governor Wes Moore. Just as an aside, Luke's about to join us. We're going to talk Lamar. We're going to talk about beating a snot out of the Seahawks, but doing some very, very important work here right now in regard to the Orioles and their lease. Had Tom Kelso on last week. Luke, if you have not listened and invested the hour and 10 minutes in Tom Kelso's information, I would highly recommend that you do that. He ran the Maryland Stadium Authority for 8 years. And there's some hokey pokey going on and some shenanigans that I need to bring light to. So I'll be doing that this week. Neil DeMoss from Field of Schemes is going to be coming on this week to discuss things with us. And we will continue to monitor the Orioles offseason. Luke's on that. I don't know when that begins. There's some owners meetings, winter meetings coming up in Nashville. Here, Nashville's nice this time of year. I can wear my old Dan Pastorini jersey and fit right in. Luke, I don't know that, you know, the baseball team took so much oxygen, right, for you and so much time for you. And we talked football, but it was a little different in August, certainly different in September, into early October. It all stopped pretty quickly. The Ravens weren't so great in September. They didn't play great competition. They weren't healthy. And I think the one thing that Tony Romo and Jim Nantz, and I want to thank Chad Steele for allowing me to be on the couch to listen to quality programming because it was pretty good. And I thought Ross Tucker was even better last week, quite frankly. But hearing what people who see the league and come in at this time and what they saw on Sunday, that looks a lot different than if they would have called the Houston game in week one or anywhere in September where the team wasn't healthy, wasn't fully functioning. And I'll say this for Harbaugh, who I haven't spoken to in about a year. His post game about when coaches see what you're supposed to do, and then on Sunday you go out and do it. And when you have players, when you have the talent that they have enough talent to win. They're one of those 8 or 10 teams that has enough talent to see them go out and do this the last couple of weeks. And Arizona, and as I wrote after they beat the snot out of Detroit, they're not all going to be perfect and pretty. And now you have division teams coming in. We're not getting style points for beating Cleveland and Cincinnati, but certainly based on what we've seen on the field twice now at home the last 2.5 weeks, last 15 days, this team has some capabilities and a ceiling that's far higher than most of the 28 teams that the Ravens have had here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way to dispute that at this point in time. When you're 7-2, when you have the best point differential in the NFL, you and I spend an entire segment barely even mentioning Lamar Jackson in the offense because the defense has played at such an elite, dare I say, kind of in that all-time territory for the Ravens through 9 games, you know, and we'll continue to say that because we know that it's a full season. We know that legacies are ultimately defined in January, and this team knows that all too well after what happened to it in 2019. But it's really, really impressive. And what we saw on Sunday on the offensive side of the ball, was it the dominant start-to-finish performance that they had against Detroit when they scored a touchdown on their first 4 drives? But boy, they really came on as the game progressed, and specifically the running game. And, you know, it was Lamar Jackson with more designed runs in the first half. You know, that was kind of the story of the first half for the Ravens on the ground. And then in the second half, boy, it was Keaton Mitchell, who it's fun for someone like me who's out there every day at training camp and you're trying to pass along, you know, okay, how's Lamar looking, right? You know, how's the defense looking? How's this guy looking?
Well, especially on August 9th, right? Like literally, right?
Yeah. I mean, all those guys that, you know, people ask me how Lamar's looking in training camp. It's like, well, how he's looked over the last 4 or 5 years. Really darn good. One of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But it's fun when you start to see guys that you don't know much about, like a Keaton Mitchell. I mean, all we knew about him from the time that the Ravens signed him as an undrafted rookie free agent was, hey, he's the son of Anthony Mitchell. You know, Super Bowl 35, returned the blocked field goal in Tennessee for, you know, for my money, one of the most exciting moments in Ravens history. Easily, you know, way up there on the list.
By the way, free
But
plug, Mitch is coming on the show this week. Anthony Mitchell will be on, so we'll have that.
very nice. Feel good for him. Feel good for him, absolutely. But, you know, Keaton Mitchell, he flashed in training camp. He showed good speed. He didn't play a whole lot in the preseason because he got banged up, if you recall, in that Washington game, but he showed off speed. And he was one of those guys that you looked at and said, you know what? Probably not in week one. And of course, he began the year on IR with the shoulder issue, but he's the kind of guy that could help them. And, you know, even going into the season before the Dobbins injury, you thought, okay, this could be a guy that could be really interesting for them, at least on special teams, maybe in a change of pace role. But then when Dobbins goes down, and we just spent a lot of time the last couple of weeks talking about the trade deadline and whether the Ravens, you know, were going to pull off a deal for a Derrick Henry or a Josh Jacobs or, you know, Saquon Barkley if he was ever going to be available. And none of that came to fruition. But lo and behold, Keaton Mitchell gets an opportunity on Sunday. And it wasn't a huge workload. I mean, he played 14 snaps on Sunday, but 10 touches, and he scores a 40-yard touchdown and reels off a 60-yard run. That was exciting to see. And when you're talking about a team in November, this is a, to me, this was a separator game. Seattle, they were good in the NFC. They were leading the NFC West. I wasn't quite convinced how good. Ravens, they've been good. We've talked about that for weeks. They're a playoff. We knew they were a playoff team even for a month ago, but it was a question of how good are they? Are they just a playoff team, or are they a really serious elite Super Bowl contending kind of team? And we got our answer on Sunday, at least as it stands right now. We saw the Ravens not just better than the Seattle Seahawks, but markedly better than the Seattle Seahawks. And for me, it was that this new intrigue, this upside that Keaton Mitchell could bring to this group. And look, it's one game. He's a couple fumbles away from being John Harbaugh's doghouse. You know, he's another hamstring injury away from being on the shelf again. So you understand that. And we all remember Jay Graham and different stories in Ravens history of a rookie running back having a nice day and then, you know, not doing a ton after that. But the speed is exciting. And we saw that on a couple occasions. And that was, you know, 9 carries for 138 yards. You know, it wasn't his debut, but it was his first game that he's actually played some meaningful snaps. And that was really exciting to see. So it's just another factor now you add to this equation of this offense that is still trying to find week-to-week consistency. But that was really fun to see. And when you talk about a Ravens offense rushing for almost 300 yards on Sunday, we know that, you know, that's exciting. That's the kind of territory that we're talking about, that 2019 team again. So really exciting to see that, and have to feel good for an undrafted rookie having that kind of day, regardless of where it goes from here.
Well, in the case of the running game, so much stock was put on Dobbins, so much talk about Dobbins in the offseason and his contract and money. And I had talked openly about how much they want to throw the football and how much they need to run the football and how they need to run the football with someone other than number eight. And they still, last week in Phoenix, were running draw plays up with a 9-point lead in the fourth quarter with Lamar Jackson. The one thing that this offense in converting touchdowns early instead of field goals, converting touchdowns instead of turnovers, converting touchdowns instead of punting, right? So those are all your options, right? They can punt, they can fumble, they can be intercepted, they can go down, they can get stuffed on fourth down, turn the ball over. There's lots of things they can do. But when they're putting sevens up and 7 times 4 equals 28, and you look up and it's a track meet, you're winning by 3 touchdowns because the defense has given up a field goal, or maybe there's been an interception, and it's 28 to 10 against a good team. And you'd say, all right, when do we get Lamar out of the game? And I don't think there's anything better they can do than have Lamar off the field 4 out of the next 6 weeks in the fourth quarter and let him play less football than more football. Just on, you love all your statistics. And by the way, I had your buddy Aaron Schatz on last week. He said the Ravens were the favorites to win the Super Bowl before they went out and beat the Seahawks the way they did over the weekends. So I had him on, and you'll hear that this week as well. But there really is something about the running game and you and I arguing, and he took your side. And as he pointed out, by the way, he smacked you around. He talked trash about you when he left. He said, Luke mimics what I say. It's not the other way around. Just so you know, he knows you read him in DVOA. He's clear that he came up with DVOA and the rest of us were borrowing it. And I love Aaron, but he agrees with you that the pass sets up the run. And I guess we can continue to fight that out. But when you can run it, you don't have to do much else.
Let's be clear. I've never said that the running game's not really important, especially for this offense. And let's be clear, as you were talking about, well, are the Ravens going to throw it 45 or 50 times? Who was the guy saying, no, they're not. That's not their plan. And that's played out that way. We're not seeing Lamar Jackson throw it 45 times, but it needs to work in concert. You have to be able to do both. You know, we talked about this so much in 2019. I mean, for as much as it was this historic running game, Lamar Jackson led the league in touchdown passes. The Ravens were first in passing DVOA that season. We forget how special that offense is. Not forget, but we diminish how special that offense is because they fell on their face in the divisional round. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. We all thought when we were talking about this team 4 years ago, at this point, getting into November, into the month of December, universally, they were viewed as the best team in football. There was just going to be the question of, okay, are they going to finish the job? You know, being the number one seed's great. Home field advantage is great. But what are you going to do with it? And we saw that they came up short in that way. And they're like the 2006 team in that way, rather than 2000. But you look at what they were able to do on Sunday. Again, more design runs with Lamar Jackson in that first half. Gus Edwards, you know, he didn't have a big day statistically beyond the two touchdowns, but, you know, he reels off a 42-yard run to start the third quarter, which, you know, removed any doubt about what kind of game it was going to be in the second half. The route was on at that point in time. But to add Keaton Mitchell to the mix and to see him do what he did, understanding it's one game, but you see the skill set, you see the speed, the elusiveness, the broken tackles that he had. How about the offensive line? As much as we spend time talking about Lamar Jackson and the running backs with the running game, offensive line, did you see Tyler Linderbaum blocking downfield, you know, hitting multiple guys to spring Mitchell for that long run? I mean, it was really impressive. They didn't even have Morgan Moses on the field on Sunday. And, you know, Patrick McCary, doing what Patrick McCary does, steps in and does a really good job wherever he's playing. So it was just a really, really impressive performance. And to the point that you just made, talking about the running game, I will continue to say this passing game needs to find more and more consistency. It's looked really good at times, but we've seen it look not so great at times. But you couple that with a running game and you are able to build a lead on the back of your defense doing what this defense has done, and then you can grind away and chew clock and control the tempo of the game and keep the opposing offense on the field, even if they figure out a way to do something against this defense. That is a frightening formula for other teams to deal with, especially when you get later into the season where you are going to have cold weather. You're going to have elements that aren't always conducive to throwing it 35 or 40 times, you know, for any team, you know, let alone the Ravens with what they want to do. So it's all very, very complimentary. And now the intrigue of adding Keaton Mitchell to this picture, and that's not to say he's going to become the feature back necessarily, but say this, he earned himself more than 14 snaps per game moving forward when you play like he did on Sunday. So it's just adding more speed, more upside, more playmaking ability. And in doing that, that makes play action and RPOs and all those different things that the Ravens want to do with their passing game that much more dangerous. So, you know, it's not that, you know, it's not this push-pull that one has to be more important than the other. Or you have to do more of one than the other. You want those two to complement each other. You know, you want your run game to augment what you want to do with the pass. You want your passing game to make your running game better. And when you have all that working, you have the makings of a really dangerous offense. And, you know, again, it hasn't been the dominant, consistent force that the defense has been week in and week out. But you start to look at it statistically and you notice, oh, they've scored over 30 points three straight weeks now. And, you know, they ran for almost 300 yards. And, okay, Lamar didn't have this huge volume game throwing the football, but he completed 21 of 26 passes, you know, for 187 yards. You know, that's still a really clean, efficient, good day throwing the football. So, you know, you look at all of that And you realize that still ways to get Rashad Bateman more involved, who to me is playing better and better here of late. We'll continue to talk about Odell Beckham, and he got the touchdown, but he also had the really bad fumble, and that's been underwhelming, if we're calling a spade, but the point is there's still some meat on the bone for this offense to get better. And when you talk about beating an NFC West leading team in the Seahawks 37-3, and you're saying that there's still ways for this group to get better on either side of the football, I'll just go back to what I said about the defense. That's really exciting. That's the stuff of not just getting into the playoffs, not just winning a division, not just having a chance to be the number one seed, but that's the kind of stuff that gives you the best possibility, the best chance to make a deep run in January and finally break through. So long way to go, and they have to stay healthy first and foremost, beginning with number eight, of course, as we've learned the last 2 years. But you have to like what you're seeing from this offense. And again, you add Keaton Mitchell, you add that speed element to the mix. We've talked about it so much with Lamar for years, Zay Flowers this season, and now you have that a speed back to add to the equation to maybe go with that thunder that Gus Edwards gives you. That's the makings of a really exciting offense. And to your point, a running game that can be really dangerous, even when you're not having to rely on Lamar Jackson's legs quite as much, even though I'll point out he did run for 60 yards on Sunday and was a big part of what they did, especially in that first half on the ground.
Luke Jones is at Baltimore Luke. Anywhere social media travels, you can also find him at Owings Mills and covering all things. And if there's breaking news, you'll get it first in our WNST text service. That is brought to you by our friends at Coons Ford of Security Boulevard. And Dennis will be here on Thursday from 3 until 5 and getting you ready for football on Sunday morning, as well as the Ravens have two games next week. Cleveland, first up, coming off a sort of a gaudy defeat of some guy named Clayton Tune. Do you like that when I say it? Is that like saying Spurgeon win? Or is that like saying something like that? Or you chuckle?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it just makes me laugh. These teams, and I get it. Kyler Murray's hurt and they just traded Josh Dobbs, who, by the way, give Josh Dobbs some props, what he did with the Vikings on Sunday. Amazing. That hadn't even practiced with them, hadn't gotten a practice rep and did what he did. But you just see some of these quarterbacks, and we talked about it with the Ravens, their defense going up against some of these backups and rookies, and you just have to laugh. But hey, they shut him out. They held him to a minuscule number of yards. But yeah, let's see how these two defenses clash on this coming Sunday, as we'll talk about more and more here.
Well, just the way I drew it up, and you can go read my columnist at Baltimore Positive, but I said all summer long, we're going to wind up talking about the defense because everybody was talking offense, the wide receiver room, the oxygen for Bateman, all the number one picks, even Aguilar. Nobody talked about him, and he was – over the first eight games, as significant as anybody. But Mark Andrews' health in September, you and I opined, and we talked, as well as trying to figure out the running game when Dobbins disappeared, because they really didn't have a running back two that was anything like him, what he was going to do. And you and I talked about Mark Ingram in 2019. I don't know that Keaton Mitchell's going to be that guy, but the wide receiver room has awakened. Beckham, as healthy, I guess, as he's going to be at this point. Bateman looking like he's out there running around and can't. And I don't think any of us ever thought that when he's on the field, he can't be a factor. He's a first-round draft pick who looked different than Perryman or Clayton or any of the other guys that you would want to lump in and say that Eric DaCosta can't identify wide receivers, right? Or Ozzie Newsome or any of them at this point. Joe Ortiz, throw them all in. I follow Clarence Moore on social media. He put a picture up the other day, so I just had to throw that in. And I see Anquan Boldin running around doing commercials now and whatnot. What do you make of this in the passing game and Todd Monken? Because when we're praising McDonald and when they're putting threes and sixes up and they're pissed off that they've given up three and six, that's sort of Ray Lewis land to some degree. And I made a lifetime here of talking about the defense first every Monday morning. We built a radio station doing that. But I don't know that we expected that or that the media expected that. And I don't even half kid. I really did think the defense was going to be better than the offense. I thought the offense was a little overhyped and hadn't shown me anything. And to some degree, The offense isn't lighting it up in the way other teams do it, where you get a passer who's 32 of 47 for 456 yards and five touchdowns. That's not what they're trying to do. You keep saying they pass to run. I'm saying if they can run the ball, they'd never have to pass, and they never will if they're up four touchdowns and they pull their quarterback out and let Tyler Huntley come around. But even Tyler Huntley threw the ball over their head to Odell Beckham. And the excitement they get for Beckham, look, this is shame on Chad Steele, shame on all of them for throwing somebody like me out that I have to sit here after 30 years and guess as to what's going on in their locker room because – they've been creepy toward me, but I haven't met Odell Beckham. I watch all of this on the outside. I view it somewhat through your lens and somewhat through whatever the lens that they allow Jameson Hensley or Jeff Zerbeck to have a press credential after their wives have made babies. But they're in the locker room. You're in the locker room as little bit as they allow you to be. It's very obvious to me to see the leadership of Roquan Smith. It's very obvious for me to see the improvement of Madubuike on the field. I know Marlon Humphrey enough to know that he's a pretend leader, but I don't think Roquan Smith is, and I don't really think Patrick Queen is either. I think they've really got something solid on the defense. Offensively, I know what Lamar's all about, but I didn't know what Odell Beckham's all about. And to see the excitement they had for him, you know, I don't know the straw that's stirring the drink and everything that went on with Eli Manning in New York and the hair color and you know, the birthday cake and all. I mean, I'm not there for all of that. You are. But it feels like from the team perspective, they like Odell Beckham and they want him to fit in and have him be the leader and all of that. I see the defense is different when I see Kyle Van Noy take the podium and as a very no-nonsense Belichick guy. Beckham doesn't come in like that, and they paid him all of this money. They're paying him $1 million a week, right? So they paid him $1 million a week, and at one point Romo's like, there is his 15th reception on the season. And I'm thinking, wow, they paid him $15 million. He's gotten $1 million a catch. It's halfway through the season. He might catch three balls in the Super Bowl that win them the Super Bowl. Like, I don't think there's any question. So I'm not going to urinate upon him. But I have often wondered, what are they thinking? What are they doing in regard to him? And then I see this excitement for him catching a garbage time touchdown from the backup quarterback, and they all ran around like they won the Super Bowl. I found that to be an interesting take on how they really feel about him.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair observation. I mean, look, has he been a $15 million wide receiver? Of course he hasn't. You know, in the past, he was a 20-plus million dollar wide receiver, you know, at least in the context of what receivers are, top elite receivers are paid today. But we know the context of that signing, right? I mean, that was done on Easter Sunday. They came to an agreement, which was, what, about 3 weeks before Lamar Jackson ultimately put pen to paper, which I'll also remind everyone, Jalen Hurts signed in the middle of that time frame too, which I still think was the impetus of getting a deal that was ultimately done that was going to make Lamar Jackson happy, and the Ravens are going to be happy to do. But I think the Ravens always viewed Odell Beckham Jr. signing as – now, certainly, some people have called it the Lamar Jackson tax, right? You know, a way to make Lamar happy, a way to appease him, a way to show that, hey, we're trying to upgrade this wide receiver room. You know, we're not sure if Beckham's going to be the guy he was 3 years ago or certainly 6 years ago, but we're trying, Lamar. Like, we're hearing you. We understand your concerns that you voiced here, in addition to just whatever you want to make in terms of the contract. So there was some of that at work. There was certainly a leadership element. And for as much as Beckham has, let's call it what it is, he's been viewed through the way that we view a lot of top wide receivers, you know, the diva term, the drama king, whatever.
He's not
you
a guy
him.
I'm going out and buying a jersey and right. putting on my back. Right. Having covered this league for 30 years. He's one of the reasons I'm sort of glad that I'm away from it, because I would have to work through it and somehow polish it up in order to get my press pass next Sunday, which, you know, in the case of Steve Smith, that's one thing. In the case of Earl Thomas, that's another thing. In the case of Terrell Suggs, that's a really another thing in regard to being around these humans who think their manure doesn't stink.
Yeah, I mean, not even getting into all that. I mean,
but personalities, I'm talking about. The personality that takes over a locker room. I was there with Rod Woodson. I was there with Shannon Sharp. I know what real leadership looks like. I saw Matt Burke and Marshall Yanda and Anquan Boldin. And I mean, I've seen all of that. I never identified Odell Beckham from the outside witnessing this as, He's going to be the difference maker that becomes a leader in your team, that you're going to import a heart transplant to your offense when you give your
Right.
quarterback $52 million a year. It was a little excessive. They could have used that on a pass rusher, but they don't need that right now, right? So as it turns out, it looks like, hey, look, I'm praising it. They all ran out there and they treat Beckham as though he's Ray Lewis of the offense in some way, right?
I mean, he's not that. He's nowhere close to that. But what I will say is, I think perception of Odell Beckham, we're talking various stops at this point in time. And look, he'd probably be the first to tell you that there were times that he absolutely was immature and times that he did things that he would regret. At the same time, and I think this has played out and has aged more favorably for him. Not that he was perfect in that scenario, but other than his spat with Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, you don't find this long list of guys that dislike Odell Beckham Jr. Sean McVay and the Rams have talked a lot about how positive he was in their locker room and the role that he played in them winning a Super Bowl. And it's not as though he put up these monster numbers for the Rams in half a season. And again, I understand it was half a season, right? It wasn't this, long period of time that he played for them.
But he did
But
produce
I
for them in drive time.
He did, sure. And the Ravens are still hoping for that element, right? And I'm not making too much out of what he did on Sunday. It was nice to see. He had five catches, 56 yards. I'd like to see him tuck the ball away at the end of the first half. I mean, that was an inexcusable fumble. But yes, the reaction there, I think, at least indicates to us, Nestor, and every indication I've gotten from talking to younger wide receivers on the team, we've seen Lamar Jackson continuously try to get Beckham involved, try to get him that touchdown.
That's what I'm saying. They're pushing.
Yeah.
It's
So
very,
it's.
very clear that there's a Lamar Beckham thing, and that if Lamar loves him, we all should be running out there and celebrating his awesomeness when we're winning 37-3.
Well, right. And the point here is not that he's their best wide receiver, because he's not. I mean, Zay Flowers is their wide receiver one, even though it's been a quiet couple of weeks for Zay Flowers, which I think is another sign that, hey, Zay Flowers didn't do a whole lot and they still won and they still scored 30 plus points. So that should tell you something about the overall potential for this offense. But the point is, I think he's fit in. I think he's well liked. I think he's been a good teammate. Yes, we've seen some frustration on the sideline, specifically going back to the PI call last week, where they're up big in Arizona and he's slamming his helmet. But he's a competitor and he's a wide receiver. And we know how that's a different breed when you're talking about wide receivers who are either elite or they used to be elite.
He
So
is Rod Tidwell to me. I've never met him. I've never been in a room. To me, he's the same guy, literally.
yeah, and look, I mean, he certainly has those elements, and look, we can all remember the antics in New York and whatnot, but there are also a lot of guys that have spoken very highly of him behind the scenes. Not even just talking the Ravens, but previous stops. I mean, I don't think there are a ton of players out there in the league in terms of guys who have played with Beckham, who have been in the same locker room. I don't think he's nearly as disliked as critics and fans
Well,
watching from afar.
Dion was great for that. Everyone
Yeah.
that ever played for
That's
Dion in
right.
baseball or football, black or white, young, they all love Dion. And
Yeah,
yeah.
so you never really know in that regard. For me, it comes down to, is he a $15 million wide receiver? Of course he hasn't been that. I'm guessing he's probably not going to be that the rest of the way. However, that doesn't mean he's not having a positive influence. That doesn't mean he can't help them make some plays. The money's already guaranteed and spent, right? I mean, so you can lament it, or bemoan it all you want, but it is what it is. But it was good to see him have that success. I think that was good for his psyche. And to your point, when you see teammates react in that way, I think that at least tells you, well, say what you want about him from afar, or antics in previous stops, or that he's this guy who's on social media and he's got all this clout and gets all this attention for someone who hasn't done a whole lot on the field this year. But there were teammates that were really excited for him in that spot. And I think that's at least a good sign in terms of what's happening behind the scenes, in terms of what's under the hood for this offense. Do I think that the touchdown and a 56-yard receiving day is going to lead to bigger and better things for him the rest of the way? I don't know that. I really don't. I'll say
I
this
think he can
much.
catch four balls in Kansas City in an AFC Championship
Maybe.
game on a 28-degree night. And if he can be that guy and be healthy on January the 28th or whatever, then you've got something. And For all of them. I mean, we could talk, health is at the forefront of all of this. The reason we're talking about Beckham, the reason we're talking about Humphrey, the reason we're not talking about Ronnie Stanley is they're all playing, and they're all playing, and everybody's playing. Everybody's up. That's probably an indictment of the old trainer who got them all COVID a couple years ago that Harbaugh was in love with from up in Pennsylvania, came down from the woods and brought the virus. But and amongst all the other injuries they've had and non-contacts and questions about Fields and all of that stuff, here we are, dude. We're into November, and I don't know if they're the healthiest team in the league, but I take a vote for that. I see the injury report other places.
Yeah, I don't want to make too much out of something that can change very quickly. And we saw how injured they were in September. You know, the saving grace at that point was what? They weren't a number, this big number of season ending injuries. So you never really know on that front, but they are healthy. That's so important to them in the big picture. But to go back to Beckham and just the wide receiver, not just the wide receivers, but just their pass catchers in general. For me, I look at this passing game as it stands in, going into week 10, as we're now into the second half of the season, we're past the midway point. Mark Andrews is still the number one guy, as many predicted before the season, as much as there was talk about wide receivers, it's like, look, other than Travis Kelce, what other tight end do you want in the NFL before Mark Andrews? And I don't think there's another guy. Kelce has done it for a longer period of time. He's got that rapport with Patrick Mahomes, but Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews have a really special rapport. We've continued to see that week after week, month after month, season after season. So he's number one. Zay Flowers, quiet day aside on Sunday, has been their best wide receiver. For me, the question remains, and we talked about this a lot in recent years. We talked about this with Andrews and Marquise Brown. We talked about this going back to, the very beginning of the Lamar era as a starter. Who is going to be that number three receiving option, that number three pass catching option? Could it still be Beckham? Sure, we'll see. I like what I've seen from Rashad Bateman still not big volume in terms of production, but he's making plays. I mean, we all remember the fantastic catch he made in Arizona a week ago that saved Lamar an interception. So
and
you have
also
him
trying to get the
You've
ball in his hands in different ways, handing off as well, right?
Right. Sure. I mean, and there's different ways to do it. But for me, for this passing game to take off, and when I say take off, that doesn't mean throw 40 or 45 times. I'm not saying that, but to be more consistent, more efficient, more productive on a weekly basis, I do want to see that third guy emerge for them a little more consistently. It was Beckham on Sunday, and albeit a portion of that coming in garbage time, although he had some catches in the first half. It's not as though he did nothing until the fourth quarter, far from it. Again, tuck the ball away. That would be the biggest thing I'd say. A really bad fumble, but it was good to see that, and they just need to find someone else who's showing up consistently as that third option. And Nestor, part of that is also on Lamar Jackson. And when I say that, it's not this major knock on him, but for most of his career as a passer, it's been Mark Andrews and generally one other guy, and that was Marquise Brown for a few years. And now it's been, Sunday aside, Zay Flowers. So finding that third guy to emerge to be consistent for them. And again, it's not that it has to be this big statistical performance, but someone that is very much involved on a play-by-play, series-by-series basis and showing up and making plays, whether it's Beckham, whether it's Bateman, whether it's Nelson Aguilar. Hey, it was nice to see Isaiah Likely involved as a receiver for the first time in a while. He's been almost a forgotten man after quite a bit of excitement about him going into year two. They need that third guy to emerge, and I'll continue to say that about this passing game if it's going to grow and be consistent on a weekly basis. But all that being said, and all the questions, and you mentioned Ronnie Stanley, who, by the way, Ronnie Stanley's not having a great year. I mentioned how you can go down the defensive roster and really struggle to find guys and identify guys that have been a disappointment. Ronnie Stanley's not playing like a $20 million tackle. That doesn't mean he's been poor. It doesn't mean he's been bad, but we saw it. That strip sack, that wasn't on Lamar Jackson. That was on Ronnie Stanley. I mean, he got beat bad on that play on the blind side. But that aside,
questions about consistency aside, questions about the passing game aside, you know, Morgan Moses missing another game on Sunday, even before a 37-point output on Sunday afternoon, you know, they came into the game 11th in total offense, third in rushing offense, seventh in points per game, sixth in third down offense, third in red zone offense. We've talked a lot about the red zone. Those are really good numbers. So while we're talking about the defense in this, in these terms of being the very best in the NFL, I wouldn't put the offense there yet, but it's still been an offense that's somewhere in that top five to top 10. And I think, again, with more meat on the bone, more ways that they can improve, whether it's mixing in more Keaton Mitchell, whether it's getting more fine, you know, refining the passing game more and more as they get deeper into the season, you know, just more comfort, you know, a higher comfort level with Todd Monken in a new offensive system. You know, this has been a really good offense still. It's not perfect. You know, it hasn't been as dominant, as elite as the defense, but the numbers don't lie. It's still been a really good offense overall, just a matter of wanting to see that more consistently on a weekly basis. But hey, crack 30 points 3 weeks in a row. They're doing something right there. And again, that Detroit defense was highly regarded a couple weeks ago. And while this Seattle defense was, you know, it isn't the Legion of Boom, they weren't scrubs either. So for them to do what they did, especially after shaking off the slow start, you know, the first quarter scoreless, couple turnovers in the second quarter, you know, to see them do what they did and then seize control of the game by running the football the way they did, That was encouraging to see. And again, it's more to build on for an offense that still feels like it's finding its way, even though, you know, it's easily been a top 10 kind of unit in the NFL. Here's Luke Jones. He's Baltimore. Luke, we have plenty to discuss this week with the Cleveland Browns coming in and Cincinnati Bengals. The Ravens have picked a pretty good time to be healthy at home, 7-2, playing well, number one on the power rankings around the National Football League. We're going to get our power rankings for our crab cakes back out. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is hitting the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're going to start things at Fadley's this week. I have my Fadley shirt on. I am wearing my Window Nation shirt, 86690 Nation. You buy two, you get two free. And you stay warm all winter, and you save money on your heating. I have seen that happen in my own bill the last 15 months since I got my Windows, 866-90 Nation. Let them know we sent you in there, and 0% financing for 5 years. You buy two, you get two free. It's a good deal. Jiffy Lube, MultiCare also. They did my oil over at Merritt Boulevard. I keep bragging on that. Although you can go to the one on York Road, or you can go to the one on Reisterstown Road. There's lots of places you can go get your oil change, and they take care of more than that at Jiffy Lube as well. We appreciate them for sending us out. All right, we're at Fadley's on Friday. I have the whole schedule up on the Facebook page. I'm going to have it all up at WNST as well. We're going to be next Tuesday at Costas. We're going to be at Coco's later this month. We're going to be at Gertrude's at the BMA. We're coming back to State Fair in Catonsville. We're going all. We're going to be everywhere. So go check it out. It's at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke's going to be everywhere that the Ravens go. They're in Owings Mills all week long. He'll be there as well as on Dennis's program on Thursday from 3 until 5 as we drive you home. Get on that WNST tech service brought to you by Coons Ford Security Boulevard. You'll get the injury reports. Hopefully, Lamar's okay after shaking off what was a little bit of a weird thing with Bobby Wagner there on Sunday. Ravens win 37-3. Good vibes everywhere, and plenty to talk about with the Maryland Stadium Authority in regard to the Orioles and their lease. I'm talking to Neil DeMoss this week. If you have not heard my piece with Tom Kelso, please, please, I implore you as a citizen who's paying for all of this and having witnessed what the Angelos family's done here the last 30 years, someone needs to step up with some truth. So we're doing that around here. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop celebrating 25 years of this madness and wise conversation. At a Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.